Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 123, How CNN Became the King of Fake News. All right, here we go.
Mixing business with politics. This is the Nathan Fraser Show.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the BYO Boss Podcast, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am your host, the High Priest of Propaganda, Nathan Fraser. And today we've got a very, very, very special guest. We've got Susan Rook, who used to be one of my favorite people on CNN. And I know, don't throw the fake news ad hominem at me right away, because Susan was actually a host on CNN back when CNN didn't lose a lot of the credibility that they've lost. And maybe I'm poisoning the well with that introduction, but one of my favorite people in the world right now, Susan Rook, is joining me on the podcast. Susan, how are you doing today?
Nathan, hi. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And first of all, before we even start, thank you so much for gracing my little podcast with your presence. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here because I love disruptors and people who think and people who are thoughtful. And that's what BYO Boss is all about and what you're all about. So the pleasure is mine, my friend.
Awesome. Well, okay, so let's just jump right into this conversation. And I want to give people a little bit of your background. You used to be a host for CNN. You were on a very popular show, and you've moved on from CNN to doing other projects now. But I want to go back to your CNN days and kind of just have a conversation about how mainstream media has changed over the years, how social media has impacted it, and maybe a look at where media is going into the future. So if we can just kind of start off, how did you get into working for one of the nation's biggest news outlets out there? And what was that like when you were working for him?
Nathan, okay. So how I got to CNN was I was in New Orleans as a television journalist. And I found this great story, an investigative story, and my news director spiked the story. It was about the city wasn't collecting tax payments. And because they had budget problems, they had closed, among other things, fire stations. And this kid burned up in a fire station that was closed. It was two doors down from his house. He died. And I cultivated a source, got documents. It's one thing to say, oh, people are criminals, but it's another thing to actually be able to document it. My news director spiked it. I wanted to turn it over to another local investigative reporter. And around this time, I had an agent who was kind of shopping around my tape, just because that's what you do. When you're in media, even if you are completely deliriously happy, you are constantly looking for your next job. And or just to make sure that you've got options in case you get fired. So my tape had made it to CNN. They had called me up. This was as I was doing this big investigation. They had called me up, and I had done so many investigative reports that they had me on the set introducing the investigative report. I wasn't an anchor. It was just like, and Susan Rook has discovered these nefarious things. And I'd be on set and I'd be like, hi, yes, and give the report. Well, CNN called me up there. They did this whole thing. They got me into makeup. And then they said, okay, so we want to offer you an anchor job. I'm like, oh, man. You guys should have said this. I don't want to do that. I like being a reporter, but thank you so much. And lunch was great. Okay, bye-bye. And I went back to New Orleans. Shortly after that trip, I turned down the job offer. Shortly after that trip, the news director spiked my story. I knew that in order to get the story out, I would need to actually physically leave. So I turned the story over to someone, called CNN back up, and I'm like, you know, it has always been my burning desire to be an anchor. Is that job still open? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, I am so there. When can I come visit you guys? 2 weeks? Okay, good. So I gave my 2 weeks notice, put my cat in the car, drove up to Atlanta just sobbing the entire way. And I remember distinctly, I was sitting with the assignment editors and reading in the New York Times that the guy that I had turned the story over to had won the George Polk Award for the investigative report. And so the story, it's bittersweet. The story that remains my proudest professional achievement does not bear my name.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So there I am destroying the ozone at CNN with anchor hair that wouldn't move in a class 5 hurricane, you know? And I just looked, and I am always one of these people. I looked, and how I got there was there was the president, and then there were two vice presidents. One vice president said, she hasn't been in the business long enough. She's stupid and she shouldn't be here. The other vice president said, she hasn't been in the business long enough, but I bet you anything, she can get up to speed pretty quickly. So both of them deadlocked. The president said, she's cute and she's cheap. Let's give her a try. So that's how I ended up at CNN.
And so you did, actually, you were the host of one of their most popular shows for a long time, Talk Back Live. Give people, I really want to do a comparison of what CNN used to be compared to what CNN is today. So let people know what it was like working on Talk Back Live.
Let me go back to CNN in the early days. I was actually the last live broadcast out of the mansion on Techwood. And at the early days, you had a bunch of drunks, either current drunks or ex-drunks, you know, kids that didn't know any better, and people who were written off as has-beens. So you had like this dregs of the news and journalism business. And we all came together and we believed passionately, passionately in the concept of we want to do it right. I mean, there were all kinds of craziness, but we really wanted to do it, meaning journalism, right. And it was about journalism was a calling. Now, I'm not in newsrooms nowadays, so I don't want to say that current journalists don't feel this, but at CNN in the early days, you didn't have stars. You had people in the trenches who were just working and trying to do good reports, good journalism. And a lot of it was boring. Whenever something happened, CNN got turned on first because it was the only live news, 24-hour live option. And then fast forward to years later when CNN opened CNN Center, that's the current setup. I was in a graduate program at Emory University pursuing my PhD because I was just profoundly bored with the anchor desk. And they came to me and they said, hey, you're talking about leaving, but we've got this talk show that we think is new. Do you want to host it? And Talk Back Live was before a live studio audience in the atrium of CNN Center, 200-person audience, and phone, fax, back then CompuServe, which some people are going to be like, what's that? Well, this was the early days of the internet. And it was designed to be a digital town hall talking about the issues of the day, smart issues of the day. And it was the first of its kind back then.
So I remember watching CNN as a kid. My mom and my grandma, they loved CNN. It was when CNN kind of first came out. And I've always kind of felt, coming from my background, I've always kind of felt like the news was more to influence people than it was to inform people. And I've always kind of felt like there was more nefarious things going on in the news. And I was always called a conspiracy theorist for feeling this way. Reading documents or watching the hearings about MK Ultra, where the CIA admitted that they had infiltrated the news agencies and they were feeding certain stories to propagandize people.
This is why I really like you, Nathan. I mean, this is why we connect. Former investigative journalist, conspiracy theorist. Oh yeah, we fit.
So here's my question, though. It was really hard for me to convince people of these beliefs 20 years ago. People looked at me and they said, "You're crazy." Now it's not so hard. People watch the news and they say, "Yeah, the news is definitely agenda-driven." The news, and it's not just CNN. I mean, even on the other side, Fox News is definitely agenda-driven as well. But what happened? Why is it that when I tried to convince people that the news was more about painting a worldview than informing people 20 years ago, it was hard for me to convince people of that. And now I hardly get any pushback at all. People are like, yeah, CNN is definitely biased. Fox News is definitely biased. And it seems like CNN went from being a turn us on to see what's going on to turn us on to see who you should vote for and how you should feel about things.
Well, so a couple of things. What happened was the intersection of money, corporate business, and some of the technical changes. So when you have news driven by financial considerations, reporters have less time to go out and find stories. So the assignment editor gets a bunch of press releases and then assigns reporters to go to those press releases things. I became an investigative journalist because I thought that anything that was a press release was obviously something that people wanted, and therefore I didn't want to do it. And the assignment editor would say, okay, yes, if you can come up with something better. So I came up with something better. So today, you have news that is not run per se by journalists, but who are run by accountants and business people and political operatives that have become very skilled at using the power of the medium in order to deliver messages. And listen, everybody's delivering those messages. This isn't a Republican. This isn't a liberal. This isn't policy-driven. I don't think it's necessarily a conspiracy, or years ago it was, just because it's hard for people to be that organized. There was definitely more of a liberal tilt at CNN back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, Ted aired Fidel Castro, but it wasn't as, there were more long form reporting, and there was also more live things where you could make up your own mind. And now finances being what they are, you don't tend to watch hearings. Nobody does. Nobody even carries them.
C-SPAN still does sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, but that's even a whole lot less. And they're only carrying the biggest ones. So it's not so much the news that is produced having a left or right or whatever tilt to it. My worry is that the pool of stories is shrinking in national news and local news. So if you go to any of the aggregate news sites or any of the newspapers like New York Times, or LA Times, if you watch a broadcast, everybody is kind of chasing after all of the same things. And Fox will have a different spin, but it's still fundamentally all the same stories. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a lot of times for me, it feels like, especially I used to work at a bar and I would watch, we would have both sets of news on two different TVs. And I would watch people argue. They'd argue about the same things, but they would just be repeating the talking points that they heard from their favorite correspondent. And it was difficult to watch because I didn't see any independent thought going on. All I saw was, I'm going to repeat this guy's talking points. Oh yeah, well, I'm going to counter you with this other guy's talking points. And that was when I really first started seeing the news as more of an information, or as more of a opinion generator than an information provider. Now,
Nathan, that's not an opinion. That's a parrot.
Yeah.
And I think what has happened is people with well-reasoned or even poorly reasoned, but original opinions have shrunk. So now they're eating the baby food of information and just parroting it back. You know, they're you're right. They're doing the talking points of whoever they most believe or most want to believe.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I noticed is people would tune into the news that backed up what they wanted to believe, not the news. I guess in marketing, one of the things that we learn is you have to know who your avatar is, and you have to know who they perceive as villains, and you need to help them throw stones at those villains, and you need to know what they perceive as their virtues or their values, and you need to prop those up and say, I agree with those values. I'm on board with those values. And that's how you keep people kind of lulled into a sleep so that they buy your product. Mm. And in social media, we've seen the same thing. Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, they like to feed you what they know you already believe. When you show up to Facebook, their algorithms are designed to show you stories that they know that you want to see. How much of that marketing and that echo chamber is deliberately woven into the way that they portray stories now on mainstream media, in your opinion?
Well, let's go back. I'm a big fan of, if you want to know what's going on, follow the freaking money. So let's talk about local news, right? Sinclair Broadcasting was trying to buy Tribune Broadcasting. Had the sale gone through, Sinclair would have controlled 72% of all local news stations. Do you remember a couple years ago that creepy video of the Sinclair anchors what? All saying the exact same thing?
Mm-hmm. And it was about the irony of it was, it was about fake news and how news had been constructed, and it was all the same people hitting the same exact same speech.
Yes, yes. And so even though that didn't come through, you have people that want to do something different being told by corporate, you will be fired unless you read this, do this. So you've got that slant. I think that's, you know, marketing really at its best. The Twitterverse just, oh God, makes people just feed them into a frenzy, which is like tons of fun. You get the adult endorphins from rage and you froth at the mouth and all of this kind of stuff. It's entertainment now. But I think that people should stop referring to news as the fourth estate. Although, I don't know, maybe I'm just like completely cynical, Nathan, but I don't see Congress as being any better. I don't see the White House as being any better. I mean, I'm truthfully really gloomy about everything.
Well, that's not the direction we're supposed to take. Let's talk about how, and as much as I can't stand Donald Trump The one thing that I really do agree with him on is when he calls mainstream media fake news. And over the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of instances where the media has jumped on a story before all the facts were in. I'm thinking about the Covington Catholic kids, where they jumped on 7 seconds of footage to paint their narrative. And then when the whole video came out, it was the exact opposite of what everybody was saying. Same thing with Jussie Smollett. The media jumped right on one narrative, painted him as a victim, and pushed the narrative of racist Trump supporters beating up a gay black man. And then it ended up being that his whole story has come into question now. And I wonder why journalists don't do the investigation. Journalists don't care about the credibility. And maybe it has to do with the audience just not caring. You know, the audience says, I want to hear what I want to hear, and I don't care whether it's the truth or whether there's something else going on.
Nathan, truthfully, I they haven't been trained to care. They don't have any experience of being mentored by people that cared. It's always with Twitter and social media, it's not a race to be right. It is a race to be first. I was watching CNN the other day, and whoever was anchoring was like, you know, other people are reporting this. We can't confirm it, but we'll tell you about it anyway. That would not have happened 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Would not have happened. But you didn't have the economic pressure to be first. Mm. And being first started with CNN, with the 24-hour news cycle, tremendous pressure to be first. I was there when people wanted to go on the air with a particular story, and the cooler, smarter, wiser, older heads would be like, no, we need to pin this down. We need to confirm it. We need to do this. Well, now those people are all retired or edged out because they cost too much money. The kids that are coming in are in a different mindset. You know, it's kind of like, oh, well, it's social media. I mean, it's not really the gravitas of a New York Times article or a long form piece on CNN. You have always had journalists who have been taken in by various things, but there never has been the time pressure that there is today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can see all of that having effect. One thing that I wanted to kind of cover before we're out of here is the consolidation of media. And right before we went on the air, you were telling me about another big buy-up that just happened. And one thing that's always troubled me is I know back in the early 2000s, I think it was like 5 to 7 major companies owned everything. And now it seems like it's down to like maybe 3. I know Disney owns so much, Viacom. We see you turn on cable and like 99% of the channels are owned by maybe 3 companies. What are your thoughts on the consolidation and the thing that you were just telling me about that just happened with AT&T? What are your thoughts about the future of media in general, at least mainstream media, when it keeps getting gobbled up and consolidated, and it almost is a monopoly on information now?
Well, I think that when there's a monopoly on information, when you don't have a variety of information sources, then that's bad. And yet, we also don't have a public that is necessarily looking for a variety of information sources. And do people want to pay for that? You have different sites that you can pay for with the cost of Netflix or something, and they're struggling. You have sites that do investigative pieces. They may or may not. I think right now what we have is a period of flux. I suspect there will always be people who want to do really good journalism, But as the larger outlets shrink, then we actually saw a model for this in the music industry. So you have a wide variety of music, and then you have more artists that kind of continually sound the same, or maybe only slightly different, say a 20% difference, but it's well within that acceptable realm. You don't have people that are hugely popular and promoted by big companies. You don't have them really promoted by the big companies. And yet, if you go in the indie music scene, it takes more time to find the indie music, but there's tons of new music out there, but it's harder to find. The same thing is happening in news, but unfortunately in news, when people go out searching, they'll find these crazy fake news sites that are just flat out made up. Just made up. I mean, made up. I'm not even talking about some journalist who uses 10 seconds of a Trump comment and then expands it out to the nth degree and says, he says this and this. Whereas if you played the whole 30 seconds, well, yeah, he said that for 10 seconds, but listen to the whole 30 seconds and it's not that extreme. Everything has become clickbait. Mm-hmm. And I think that's bad for us all. AT&T's Warner Media just announced that they are breaking up Turner Broadcasting. So CNN still has 6,000 people employed in Atlanta, and a bunch of them are saying, oh, it's an end of an era. And it truly is. Who knows if they're even going to keep CNN? I suppose it'll stay around in some incarnation, but I don't know. We might end up getting our news from the Cartoon Network. Oh, wait, that's also owned by TBS. Who knows what will happen with that?
So I kind of want to touch on something, actually, that you mentioned. I already said before we're out of here, but you kind of drew parallels between the news and the music industry. And I know that right now, like YouTube commentators are one of the biggest threats to the mainstream media, because YouTube commentators, they're able to do pretty much the same thing, but with just a webcam and a small setup in their bedroom. There's certain guys like Tim Pool, who's a very centrist. He used to work for Vice. He quit Vice to start his own thing because he was sick of the corruption at Vice. And he pulls in more viewers than you know, Don Lemon or Tucker Carlson, and we're seeing that there is kind of like an emergence of indie news journalists out there that still care about presenting a fair and balanced, I hate to use the term, but still care about presenting the facts and being honest when they're adding their own opinion to it. But the news is definitely, we see hit pieces on journalists like that coming from mainstream media. But I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts, because I know that you actually just started a podcast for one of our mutual friends, Mike Shreve. You're working on his No Pants project. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the wild west of the media that the internet presents right now. And is there any hope for journalism? I see a lot of hope for business when it comes to the internet. And I wonder what your thoughts are on journalism. You said that there's a lot of fake news that arises in the internet, but do you see any hope for the future of journalism on kind of maybe the podcast scene or the YouTube scene? Or is there anything that you would say there's a bright light to look forward to?
Well, let's first say that we are in a period of disruption. It is a disruptive economy. And so as mainstream becomes more and more corporate, there is more pressure to become acceptably corporate. So you're going to see the ability to hold to different standards in light of economic pressure will continue to shrink. I think the audience will continue to shrink because more and more people are looking for on-demand stuff. Nobody goes to a particular, you know, 6 a.m., 7 a.m., 10 a.m. broadcast. I mean, that's almost a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. I think podcasts are fantastic. I think YouTube is fantastic. The No Pants Show podcast is an interview setting, and it's primarily about business and the work of freelancers. So I think things are covered there. I haven't seen the same kind of thing happen with political stuff, because think about it. Say you are investigating a political run. If you're on a podcast for an hour and you know that people are going to take a 10-second snippet of something that you said and blow it into mammoth proportions that could possibly sink your entire political campaign because it's been taken to a ridiculous degree, there's no incentive to be on the podcast. Mm. Right? So I think that all of this has a chilling effect. But whenever you have a disruptive economy, there's a period of disruption and then things kind of settle down, and then there's a settle down thing, and then there's more disruption. And I don't know, it's the cycle of life, not to break into Lion King songs or anything.
Yeah, it does seem to be that's the way that it goes, and we are kind of in one of those disruptive moments.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I mean, you know, listen, you have this podcast. You're asking these questions. I think that's what needs to happen during the disruptive. People like you who are asking these questions, maybe we don't come up to any answers, but God bless you, sir, for asking the questions.
Well, thank you. And I'm blushing over here. where, if people want to go check out the No Pants Project, because I do have the majority of my audience is entrepreneurial and freelancer people, let them know a little bit about what that entails and where they can go to find that in the future.
Oh, fantastic. Go to thenopantsproject.com. It's a course for freelancers, and I've taken the course and ended up doing the podcast because I love the course. I love the community. It's people who are considering freelancing, looking for a different career chain, moving their freelancing business up to the next level. I think in this period of upheaval, that's actually really good for a lot of people. It always is. The periods of upheaval are the times when people come in and they try new things and they create new things. It's disruptive, but it's also hugely creative. So instead of getting upset with the news, put your time and energy into growing your business. Ignore the news and then write Nathan an email and say, okay, this week, what do I really need to know?
Well, Susan, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your insight. And I think that I think our listeners got a very interesting behind the scenes look at what's going on in the media right now. So I really appreciate you spending your time with us.
Well, I think the world of you, and I was thrilled when you and I started talking and you were like, hey, you want to be on my podcast? I'm like, yes, I do.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. The website to go check out is thenopantsproject.com. And until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. We will catch you later. Deuces. You want to get more sales from your website? A simple $4 investment can make that happen. Get my time-tested template formulated for sales pages, proven to turn more of your website visitors into paying customers. Discover how to write the perfect sales page, even if you're not a copywriter. Go to salespagebook.com and get your copy today. A higher converting sales page is only one click away. Go to salespagebook.com today.